This time on Floss Weekly, Gareth Greenaway and I talk to the developers of Weave, a great way of managing your containers on Docker and getting them to talk to each other. That's coming up next on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 339, recorded June 3rd, 2015. Weave. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, you get every way to pay. To learn more and to try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/floss. And by DigitalOcean. Simple, fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit digitalocean.com. And once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS, that's FLOSS, in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I'm your host for this week. My name is Dan Lynch, and I'm calling in from Liverpool in the UK, in the northwest of the UK. The keen-eyed amongst you will notice that I'm not Randall Schwartz. Unfortunately, Randall is under the weather this week. He's not feeling so well, so we send him our best wishes. I parachuted in at the last minute. Not literally. That would have damaged the ceiling. I parachuted in at the last minute to take the reins today. So it's great to be here. I've got a co-host with me as always, and today it's Gareth Greenaway. Gareth, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Dan. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
No problem. And are you in your secret bunker again?
I am in my secret bunker in Thousand Oaks, California, deep underground.
Excellent. That's good to know. So today's guest, we've got Weave is our guest project. We're going to talk to two of the developers from Weave. I have to admit, because I did parachute in at the last minute, I've only had a quick look at Weave, but it's to do with Docker and integration of your apps and moving them easily between instances and portability, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for. Gareth, do you know any more about this than I do?
Just a little bit. From what I've gathered in my brief research of it, it looks like it's orchestration for Docker instances and applications and making it easier to get your applications into Docker containers and Yeah, that's basically what I gleaned from reading about it.
Yes, similar to what I gleaned from it. But then, luckily, that's why the guests are here, to tell us about the project. So, thankfully, we can ask them to fill in the gaps for us, which should be good. So, before we get into the show, I'd like to mention our sponsor for today and thank them. So, Braintree. This episode is brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer multiple mobile payment types. Start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and more, all with a single integration. It offers simple, secure payments and code you can integrate in minutes. And there's all kinds of cool stuff on there. It's 10 lines of in-app code, so it's really, you know, simple to integrate and get to work with. So Braintree offers you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. Quick, knowledgeable developer support if you have any questions. Start accepting Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and whatever's next, all with a single integration. With Braintree V.0 SDK, one simple snippet of code, and you're all set up in less than 10 minutes. To learn more and get your first $50,000 in transactions for free, that's free of fees, that's excellent, you can go to braintreepayments.com/floss. That's braintreepayments.com/floss. And we thank them for their support of Floss Weekly. And with that, I think we should find out more about Weave and what it's all about. So I need to welcome our guests. We have Ilya Dmitrychenko, which I nearly messed up, although I got it right in the intro before we started. And and Brian Borum as well. So hello, guys. How are you doing?
Hi. How are you?
Hello.
Excellent. So I'm going to ask you where you're calling from. I'll do it one by one to make it easier. So Ilya, where are you speaking to us from?
London.
London, excellent. The right side of the Atlantic. No, I shouldn't say that. I'll get in trouble. but the my side of the Atlantic, should we say? And Brian, where are we speaking to you from?
Yeah, I work with Ilya, so we're both in London, in Shoreditch, in the kind of startup central in London.
Ah, the Silicon Roundabout, as it's been nicknamed by a few people. Excellent. Okay, so you got Silicon Valley, we got Silicon Roundabout over here. Very cool area. I know it quite well. Excellent. All right, and so the first thing we need to do is kind of establish exactly what Weave is and how it works and who it's for and stuff. So I don't know if either of you want to take that one first. Who feels confident about that?
What do you think? Shall I go?
Brian, take it away.
Weave is a suite of tools to work with Docker containers. It's all about connecting, observing, and controlling those containers. I don't know, do you think I should say a little bit about Docker, or would your audience know quite a lot about that already?
We had Docker on show 330, but it's always worth explaining these things. If you can give us a very quick kind of overview, that'd be brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, so the basic idea is in the space called Linux containers, and you can think of a container as like a very lightweight virtual machine. It's not really a virtual machine, but it gives the same kind of idea. You can isolate your applications. They don't clash with each other. And Docker also gives a very neat deployment mechanism. So that's why they talk about it like a shipping container. You package everything up into one container. You deliver that to the target where it's going to run. And you unpack it, and it just works. Very, very portable. Docker will run on any modern Linux, and you can just bring your files into those containers and run your application and run on any Linux just like that. So I guess Weave is all about connecting those containers together. First thing you notice if you use Docker, if you run several containers, is kind of getting them to talk to each other across TCP sockets, that kind of thing. It's a little fiddly. Docker provides a way to do it, but it kind of involves environment variables and port mapping and stuff like that. One of the first things we delivered was a network, a software network that gives your containers their own network, so it's kind of application focused. Application developer can run up their own network, connect their containers together, and they'll just talk to each other. We're moving on. We recently added a thing called Weave Scope, which lets you bring up a graphical display of what's running, what all your containers are doing. And plan to extend that further with more services and facilities. Like I say, the phrase, the mission statement is connect, observe, and control.
Hmm. Excellent. And if I gathered right from that, basically my kind of simple takeaway from that was what you were saying is you've got lots of containers, obviously, in your Docker stuff, and you want to manage a lot of them at once. You maybe want to move them all somewhere else. You want to do God knows what kind of operations on them. And this gives me an easy way to kind of tie them together. I'm getting why you called it Weave now. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So this thing that the containers will run anywhere. A developer is probably going to build and test and run a lot of containers on their own machine, maybe even on their laptop. Then they might want to deploy on a cloud, on Amazon or Google Cloud, something like that. And getting those facilities for managing distributed applications at scale in a cloud kind of a way, but in a portable way. So you do the same stuff on your laptop as you do at Google Cloud, say. That's a kind of a real trick. And the thing that we're really aiming for is to make all those kind of things very, very easy, very simple to get going, simple to fire the thing up, tear it down, So everything runs in a container is another thing. So what we do is all isolated as well.
Hmm. And Docker, I mean, Docker's been around for a little while. It's very, very popular at the moment. It's one of the hot kind of projects that everyone's chasing after and wants to know more about. So how old is Weave and how did it get started?
Weave was launched mid-September last year, so not quite a year old. How did it get started? The founders of Weave, or Weaveworks is the name of the company, Alexis and Matthias were the founders of RabbitMQ, which is another open source project that I guess many people will have heard of. And RabbitMQ was purchased by VMware, and so Alexis and Matthias had quite a lot of experience in that environment, trying to build distributed applications which had to be very robust, very reliable, and they got into Docker. They saw Docker. They saw it as one of the key things that's going to be really central to the next wave of cloud computing development. So they saw the opportunity to add on to Docker to deliver those facilities that application developers would want, and formed the company to do that.
Excellent. And Ilya, I don't want to ignore you there. I feel I'm being rude here, just asking all the questions to Brian. So, who's using Weave right now? What's your kind of target audience, if you like, and what kind of things are they doing with it that's exciting?
Sure. So there are a few commercial customers, and there are some open source projects based around Weave. Right. So on the open source side, one very interesting recent announcement had been a project called Apollo, and it uses Mesos, and it is essentially an orchestrator for Docker. So it is essentially a Mesos framework that utilizes a bunch of other open source projects, and Weave is what they've picked for the networking. I myself build integration for Kubernetes, which is another high-level orchestrator similar to Apollo, and there are various people in the community who build some smaller projects, and we have a couple of production customers who actually build commercial products on Weave, and those are Tutum and Cloud66. Tutum is a platform as a service for developers who choose to use containers to ship their applications, and they just want to run them somewhere. And Tutum provides a way of deploying clusters of Dockerized applications in different clouds. Similarly, Cloud66 has a kind of platform as a service offering like this. However, they go slightly different level, and the approach is generally quite different. So there are production systems running on Weave, and we have more coming. So these are the two that we have publicly announced so far, and we every other week we find a new open source project that uses it.
Excellent. And obviously you're tied in quite closely to Docker. So do you have a strong relationship with the Docker developers and the community there, I imagine?
Yeah, sure. We work in very closely with Docker, and we are working on introducing native networking extensions into Docker Core.
Excellent. And we have our first question from IRC. I'm frantically scrolling up the page here because I've lost it. There we go. So we have a question from the Andromedan, I think you would pronounce that, who asks, will Weave add support for either Vagrant or Rockets? I don't know who wants to take that one, but feel free.
I can take that. Uh-huh. I mean, we work very closely with Docker, as Ilya was saying, but there's actually very little in the software of Weave that is tied to Docker. It's really just in the interfaces. So certainly both of those things are possible. We've looked at a bit of Rocket. It's kind of an interesting project coming along. We haven't We haven't shipped either of those integrations. One of our contributors doesn't work for Weaveworks. Alex Bly has his interest is in using Weave to connect up virtual machines that are not containers, not using Docker. So it's certainly something that other people in the community are working on. But I mean, you know, straight answer to the question, we don't have an integration with Vagrant or Rocket right now. It's certainly possible, and we'd love to. If anyone's really interested in that and wants to contribute to an open source project, then we'd certainly love to see a pull request for that.
So if I have like an existing Docker setup today, and I'm actively using it, how easy is it to introduce Weave into that equation?
Sure. I mean, ease of use is our primary focus. So to install Weave, you just need to download a shell script that you put somewhere in your path, and then you launch the router, and you can run containers on Weave. So there's Weave launch, Weave run, and you're up and running, essentially. So that's pretty easy, and that's our primary focus, to be honest. And all the pieces that we introduce, like service discovery and DNS and scope, they all shift as containers. All you should need is the Weave script that knows where to find those containers and how to start them.
And another thing we really developer does not have to change their source code. So Weave provides a network. It's really a software implementation of an Ethernet switch. So anything that runs on top of your normal network will run on top of Weave. Ilya just mentioned service discovery. How do you find out where something's running? And we actually implement that by using the DNS protocol. So you don't have to change your software because everything already speaks DNS. So that's a kind of a pattern that we want to let people carry on exactly the way they have developed software in the past. We don't want to give them a new set of APIs, new set of tooling. We don't want to do any of that. We just want to fit right in there and make things easier.
So if I'm using an existing Docker setup and I go to introduce Weave, is it possible through, does Weave have some sort of API connection that I can write my own software that sits on top of Weave, or do I have to kind of use Weave as it is?
Yeah, well, the main way you interact with Weave, we provide a command line interface, so you can run those commands, you know, from anywhere that can run commands. Because we are in the mode where we're connecting things together, then basically the only thing you want to do is either attach your software to the network or detach it from the network. Those involve a few bits of machinations with the Linux networking stack. So basically, running our command line interface is really the way to go with that. When you get into the other parts of the system, like for instance service discovery, like I say, the API is DNS. You know, if you want to find where something is, you hit our 53 on our DNS container, and it'll tell you the answer. There are a few things where we have like a REST interface sending data over HTTP in a more of an administrative nature, but mostly it's either just running commands or using interfaces like TCP and DNS that are already built into your software.
Cool. So we talked a lot about Weave and Docker. Does Weave rely or depend on any other technology to do its job?
Essentially, no. There is everything in our software that you need to run it. There is no secondary package that you would need to install as such. So there is no external database that Weave has to talk to or anything of that sort.
can it be tied into to use existing technology, say something like etcd or console?
Sure. I mean, even etcd or console could be used together in various different ways, and our users had been telling us about very interesting approaches there. So yeah, I wouldn't be able to classify that right now. There's like, you can use it one way or the other, and people find uses for various interesting things at times.
Cool. So if I wanted to get started using Weave, what's the best approach right now?
So if you just go to our repository on GitHub, it's github.com/weaveworks/weave. You'll find a README there, and all the instructions are there. You can otherwise look at more high-level guides on our homepage, which is weave.works/guides, and you'll find things like how do I run Weave with Nginx on AWS or DigitalOcean instead, whichever you prefer. There are guides of that nature there.
Okay. So
that's
a lot of this
works. That's weave.works/guides.
Oh, cool. Okay. So one of the areas that we've kind of focused a lot on in the discussion has been around kind of the networking of Docker and Docker instances, and how Weave is fitting into that and helping making that easier. How does Weave compare with kind of the broader software defined networking space?
Well, let me have a go at that. The software-defined networking, most of the vendors in that space take as their starting point that they want to replace a full-on enterprise network. You know, that they're going to go head-to-head with Cisco and do all the things that Cisco can do, and then be software-defined, so they're incredibly flexible on top of all that. Weave takes a very, very different approach, very application focused. So we're not claiming to be able to run your entire enterprise. We are claiming to make it a lot easier to put applications together using things like containers and Docker. So it's a very different starting point. We try as far as possible to make it so that you don't need knobs to turn and things to tweak and so on. Whereas those enterprise products, they tend to start with a huge list of features and knobs and controls and then in order to run the thing, you need a very big control screen it's just a very different philosophy. We want to make it very easy. Download the thing, run it. It's up and running. We think those products, those SDN full-on enterprise products, are great, and you do need those real full-on networks. But in our space, it's very, very application focused. And on a much smaller scale.
Do you guys have plans to tie into any of the existing kind of open source networking technologies like Open vSwitch or even like the Cumulus hardware switches?
Yeah. We've taken a look at a number of those things, and I guess we don't have any firm kind of news to announce on that front, but there's definitely some interesting areas, and particularly integrating with the kernel data paths that can give us performance. Not so much on the specialized hardware, but yeah, it could happen.
Okay. So what other, is there any other kind of open source or closed source projects that you know that are using Weave existing, or is it too early kind of in the in its development? Or
you're asking about open source projects?
Yeah, if any like existing open source projects or even closed source products are using Weave.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of those that I mentioned earlier is a container orchestrator called Apollo by Capgemini, and they have PicTweave because it was easiest to use. There is another open source project called Container, which is also slightly different kind of orchestrator, but it also uses Weave, and they have more like a drop-in approach rather than others. So Apollo, you could potentially need to plan a cluster ahead of time, and then you deploy these new machines, and there will be your Apollo machines that run Mesos and Zookeeper and Console and a couple of other things that you would need for a full-scale orchestrator like this. However, Container is a different type of orchestrator where you just install an agent on every Docker host, and whatever you've got there, it doesn't really matter what operating system you're using. You have chosen that already. You can just start Container agents, and those Docker hosts will be joined in this cluster where you can deploy containers to, and they have PicTweave for networking there too.
No.
Excellent. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, I thought I'd throw in. There's a kind of a cloud hosting provider called Cloud 66. Another commercial user of our product.
Excellent. And that leads me in quite well, actually, Brian, because great discussion so far, really interesting. We have to stop for just a second while we pay the bills, as Randall says. So I just got a really quick ad. But actually, it links in perfectly because I think you've already mentioned them. DigitalOcean are one of our sponsors for today. So whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started and you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting, DigitalOcean provides developers with droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. And in the interests of, I suppose, journalistic integrity on this one, I signed up with DigitalOcean last night so I could actually know something about what we were discussing. And I can confirm that you can indeed sign up and use our code FLOSS, which I'll tell you more about in a minute, to get $10 of credit with DigitalOcean. I went there, signed up last night. It was pretty simple, very quick and easy to do. I set up a new droplet with, I think I chose Ubuntu, but they've got a great selection of OSs there. Obviously, you've got lots of different Linux distributions like Ubuntu and CentOS and Debian, of course, and others. But they've also got BSD, which I know Randall's a big fan of, and is obviously a well-established, popular, and very secure server operating system. So if you want to use FreeBSD or something like that, you can just click a button in the panel and it will fire you up a new droplet with FreeBSD as well, which is pretty cool because not so many hosts provide that as easily out the box. There's also a web console, which I used last night, which is quite interesting. So once you've fired up your new droplet, you can actually then click in your web browser, in your user control panel, you can then click a button and get straight into a VNC session where you're actually seeing the output, obviously the screen from your droplet, so you can get straight into it, which I found was quite interesting. Obviously, you've got SSH access and other things as well, which I would probably use more often, but that's a really nice feature to be able to just click on it and start doing stuff in a terminal straight away. And you've got full root access as well, which is awesome. So DigitalOcean has an incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing scheme. Servers start at $5 per month. And there's also even hourly pricing, if you want to do hourly pricing, which is interesting, which starts at less than one penny per hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. To do that, you need to visit digitalocean.com. And that's digitalocean.com, and create yourself a new account on there. Once you confirm your email and some of your account information, you can go to the billing section in the control panel in the settings there, and you can enter the promo code FLOSS. That's FLOSS, FLOSS, and you get yourself $10 free credit. So you can have 2 months, a $5 droplet for 2 months for free to try out, which is great. It's plenty of time to have a play with it and get used to it and find out more. So go to digitalocean.com and use our code, which is FLOSS, FLOSS, in the billing section and get yourselves $10 of free credit. So thank you to DigitalOcean for helping to support. And keeping on that tip, you did mention DigitalOcean before. So are they already, you can use Weave presumably on top of DigitalOcean already?
Yes, absolutely. And I do think they have some images where Docker is pre-installed. So it should be quite, quite quick to spin up, and then you just need to install the event, which takes a few seconds, and you should be ready to go in minutes. Yeah.
Excellent. So it fits in perfectly. All right, then I'll stop dragging you guys into the ad reads as well and get back to the topic of Weave now. So I was having a look at some of the information on Weave before, and I noticed, I don't know whether you guys will be in a position to answer this. Maybe the founders of the project might know better, but I noticed that it's all written in Go, the Google language. And I was curious what made Go a good choice for this and how you find working with Go. I don't know if who wants to go for that, though. No pun intended.
It's Brian here. I was employee number three after the founders, and software was already written Go when I joined. So I can't speak to the details, but we do find it very, very effective for writing this kind of software that needs to be very concurrent, needs to be very efficient. Go is also a great developer's language, I think, because it's very, very straightforward. You can pick up a page of Go written by anyone and figure out what's going on immediately. I personally have a lot of background in C++. So that's pretty much the opposite statement that you could make about C++, that you know, depending on where someone's coming from, you can pick up their code and just have absolutely no idea what they're doing with templates and things like that. So that's my experience. This was my first Go project. I had to learn very quickly, but it's been great. Docker's written in Go, I guess. Not that makes any big deal. There's no kind of intimate tie-ins or anything like that. But it Go seems to be very popular in this kind of ecosystem, and we do find it very, very effective.
And obviously, you mentioned C++ and obviously the C as well. You would imagine with its kind of low level kind of integration with the kernel and other things, they might go for something like C++ or C, I suppose, would make sense for the Linux kernel. But lots of people using Go, and as you say, Docker written in Go, so obviously good for these kind of tasks. I was just curious; it's not a language that I've really gotten into yet. So I'll have to do that at some point. So we should talk a bit about kind of organizational stuff and licenses, because that's really exciting, and I get excited about licenses. I'm the only person in the world who does, I think. What licenses is Weave under, and why?
Yeah, it's under the Apache license. It is a fully open source product, and we wanted to be as open and flexible as possible. So it's all under the Apache license. That means that you can download it and use it. You can have to get into big debates with your legal team or anything like that. And also, if you want to contribute, we have a very simple DCO developer certification. You don't have to write any legal documentation on that side. You just certify that who you are and that you mean to be contributing this whatever it is you're contributing to the project. And we wanted to make that as easy as everything else. So pick the Apache license and the DCO model.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I was going to ask about. Are you using, do you use Git or anything? How can people kind of contribute? What's the mechanism for that?
Yeah, project's on GitHub. So github.com/weaveworks/weave. Weave is the first project, the network. Our other projects like Scope and so on have their own directories. We do use Git internally when we're working on it, but So yeah, I mean, your question was if somebody wants to contribute, they can contribute in lots of different ways. You know, we have people who come along and say, I spotted a typo in the documentation, and all the way through to people saying, I really felt it needed this feature, so here's the code. So if you see something wrong with it, you can just raise an issue, click on the new issue button on GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
We try to turn those around very, very quickly. If you want to contribute something, raise a pull request, and we'll take a look at it. We'll usually make a few comments and try and make sure everything fits in with the style and the quality that we try to maintain. But we try to be very approachable and accept contributions and turn things around quickly. We're also on IRC. On Hashweave Network. If you want to raise a shout or find our email address on the weave.works homepage.
And is there anything particular, I'm sure, obviously I know the way the open source world works, I'm sure you'll take any help on any on anything people want to help contribute and work on, but is there anything particular that you guys are kind of looking for? Maybe someone watching or listening to this thinks, oh, I know about that and I could help with certain things. Is there anything particular maybe?
Oh, that's a good question. Nothing immediately. I guess one of the things we've find hardest to know is what people are doing with it. It's a funny thing, you know. You put the software up there, and it has it gets downloaded like thousands of times a day, we don't know what people are doing with it. We occasionally, quite often, you bump into people at a meetup or a conference or something like that, and they say, "Hey, I'm using Weave and I love it." Besides that, just knowing what people want is one of the hardest things. So would very much encourage people to try it out and just, you know, just write a note saying I thought it was going to do this and it didn't, or I see what you're doing here, but it could be better if you did it this way. That is one of the things we find hardest to know what people are actually doing with the software. We have our own projects within the Weaveworks company that we're adding certain flexibility and working on performance and trying to broaden out the offering, but. Yeah, it's a good question you raise, and I couldn't put my finger on one specific thing that I'd really encourage people to jump on.
So one of the things I was wondering about, you've talked a lot about Weave being an open source project, and all the code, including for Weave and Weave Scope, is on GitHub, and anyone can download it. It's under the Apache license, but Weave is also a company. You guys recently got a round of funding, and you talked about your co-founders or your founders rather. How if all the code and all the everything you're doing is all open source, how does Weave as the company attempt to make money? What's the goal there?
Yeah, we're not at that part of the growth. We're still growing the company in a purely open source model right now. But we will have things that we hope people will want to pay for. The obvious one is support. You know, people who are using this thing in production, a lot of them will just feel more comfortable if they have a contract and they're paying for it, and they feel better that way. That's very much the kind of the Red Bull. And obviously the founders having done RabbitMQ, that was another open source project along very similar lines in terms of charging for support. We're still working on to what extent you can have enterprise features alongside open source features in a product like this. It's a very tricky line to walk, because you don't want to render the open source project useless by taking something out that everyone's going to need. So you know that's for the future. That's something that we'll work on and evolve. We certainly have people coming to us and saying, you know, what can I buy? You know, can I buy a support contract? And like I say, we're not at that point yet. We're still really trying to grow the offering, grow the community as a pure open source play. At the moment, and obviously the great thing about open source is once it's out there, what we publish under that model we can't take back. We have to add more that people are going to want to pay for at that point in the journey.
So one of the questions that Dan asked was around contributions to the project. Who decides, who makes the final call on if someone contributes a feature or a patch? Who kind of makes the final decision on whether or not that feature or that patch gets into the Weave code?
Well, there haven't been too many arguments. Well, maybe I should rephrase that. I mean, we have a lot of arguments within the team about the best way to do things, and sometimes those arguments involve outside contributors. But it's all in the name of trying to deliver a better quality product. I guess technically, Matthias, who's the CTO, would have final say, but. Yeah, I don't think it's really come to that. It's been something that it's kind of a more of a discussion, we try and do the right thing in the end.
Sure. So I had a question and I totally spaced on it.
That's okay. I can jump in if you like.
Yeah,
I'll jump in. Yeah, no problem. I've done that quite a lot of times myself. And the question just goes. We actually to save us, we have a question from the IRC channel as we're talking right now. IRC is working away there, and they always provide great questions. So I have one about security actually. Let me scroll up a little bit. So. Yeah, this one says sysadmin here. So it says, I was trying to understand the security part included with Weave. I read their crypto page but didn't understand it too well. I guess I'm used to the VPN and/or SSH key exchanges. You guess used to VPN, sorry, and/or SSH key exchanges. So my question at the end of all this, is, they say, is how secure is Weave and how does the security work?
Shall I? You want to have a go at that, or shall I try and? I think that maybe split the answer into two parts.
Sure.
We've set up a software network, what we call an overlay network, running on top of some underlying network, and we rely on TCP and UDP on the underlying network. So if you set up your underlying path using something like IPsec, then that's going to have all of those security features, and you don't need to worry about what Weave is going to do. So for people who are really looking for a battle-tested security product, something in that space is going to be much easier to kind of talk about and look at, you know, how many years has that been out there and who's beaten it up and how many security bugs have been found lately, et cetera. We do have inside the Weave product, the facility to encrypt the communications. And if you use that facility, then what you do is you give a shared secret to all the nodes on the network. It's very simple to set up, but it's not something we kind of leave that up to the user about how they're going to get that secret out there, how they're going to protect that secret. In terms of, you know, they need to get it installed on all the machines. Let's backtrack on that. So the Weave built-in encryption is set up in a much simpler way. It is using the NACL library. You know, we didn't write our own actual encryption algorithm or anything like that. That's an open source, fairly well respected implementation. And your questioner was talking about the encryption page. You know, we do lay out a lot of detail about how that works on the wire. There's a series of operations where the two sides are kind of shifting the what's called the nonce, the bit that in the kind of guts of the encryption algorithm that is changing over time, so that an attacker would find it hard to analyze the traffic and decrypt it. But you don't need to understand at that level of detail. The key things, number one, you know, if you're really hot on getting a really high level of guarantee of your network security, run Weave on top of something like IPsec. It'll work fine. If you want to use our simple but effective encryption, what you should know is you need to get a shared key, a shared secret onto every node, and then we take that key and we use the NACL library to run encryption. Those are the key points, I think.
Excellent. And that was quite a difficult question. So kudos to you for answering that as fully as you did. It was a tricky one. I've got another, well, I say potentially tricky question, I suppose. We're kind of jumping around on topics here, but just going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier with contributions and agreement licenses, all that kind of stuff. You mentioned that you've gone from the model with an agreement, a developer agreement that people presumably sign or whatever and agree to when they contribute. Does that include copyright assignment? How does that work? Because I know that's quite difficult for a lot of open source projects. We've got obviously different conflicting opinions on which is best. You've got like the Linux kernel where everybody retains their own copyright. Each developer makes it difficult to relicense, or some would say almost impossible to relicense later on. Or then you've got other companies and developers and so on who say you must assign your copyright to us, therefore we'll decide if we want to change license later on. So does it include a copyright assignment, I suppose, is my question?
It's the same what the Linux kernel folks do. It's the DCO model.
Certificate
of origin.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Making it easy for everyone.
Yeah. Sorry, go on, guys.
There's no copyright assignment, right? Just as Ilya said, you're certifying that you created it and that you have the right to contribute it, but we don't we're not requiring any more than that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And obviously a model that everybody knows pretty well, because Linux kernel being, you know, 20 something years old now at this point. Okay, so we are kind of getting towards the end of our allotted time for the show, but I wanted to make sure that we've covered all the things that you guys wanted to mention. So is there anything that maybe we haven't asked you about, or anything that you want to tell us about Weave that you think we should get in there before we run out of time?
Well, I do think that we should mention our latest addition to the project family, the VScope, which is the visualization tool, whereby you can fire up an instance of it on the Docker host, and you can observe all the containers you have there without having to declare them up front. So it will just look at the Docker API, it will look at other processes running, it will look at the network traffic, and build a diagram of your application. And you can just look at it and decide what's going on there. And that really helps developers who just jump into Docker. They've fired up a bunch of containers, and then they're actually still not totally familiar with Docker, and they're not sure where to look for every little detail.
Mm.
Our Scope tool can visualize that for you. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. Check it out. It's still very recent, and we are looking forward to hear from the users how they like it, how they find it. And do check out Scope as well as VivNet.
Excellent. And Brian, anything you want to mention quickly, or have we covered pretty much everything?
I'd certainly underline, take a look at Weave Scope. It brings up a GUI in a browser. It's kind of fun thing to look at, and you may even learn something about your application. You didn't realize it communicated in certain ways. It's been an exciting time working with the company. You never quite know what's going to happen next. The whole ecosystem, the whole Docker ecosystem, and products coming along. The people are releasing new things to work with Docker every week, and we have to try and keep up with that. Can be a full time job, but we're always aiming to be the simplest and easiest way to build your applications using containers.
Excellent. And I have to ask our favorite two questions. I don't know if you've seen the show before, and we have two questions that we ask to every guest at the end. And I know Randall gets a lot of messages from people if we don't ask them. People like to hear about this. So I guess we'll take it in turn. So Ilya, I'm going to start with you. What's your favorite scripting language, if you had to pick one? Sorry.
Was I muted again? I was saying right. Python.
Python? Oh,
Python.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how about text editor? What's your favorite kind of coding environment or text editor?
Yeah, mostly use Vim. I tried Sublime, but like it.
That's cool. I like Vim as well. I know Randall's an Emacs guy, but you know it's a free country, a free world, and we're there's great editors all over the place. So Brian, I'm going to have to ask you the same thing. So, favorite scripting language first off.
I probably fall back to Bourne Shell most of the time. Mm. Runs everywhere.
Excellent. And how about editing? What do you use for editing?
I'm an Emacs man. Yeah.
There you go. See.
25
Excellent.
Years.
So there you go. Balances it out. Somewhere Randall's kind of cheering for that. He's a big Emacs guy. And as I said, there's room for all of us in the world. All right. And so thank you very much for coming on, guys, and telling us about Weave. If people want to find out more about Weave, they need to go to weave.works is the address. Weave.works. I have to admit, I didn't know you could get a .works TLD domain until today. So that's excellent. Ilya and thanks for coming on. And also thank you to you, Brian, as well.
Thank you.
All right, then. So that was. Hang on, I'm going to get the names wrong now. I'm going to say Ilya's name correct, hopefully, again. So that was Ilya Dmitrychenko, and I've forgotten Brian's name. It's not on the screen. There you go. Brian Borum, there we go, from the Weave project. So go to weave.works and check that out some more. Gareth, what did you think of that?
It was really interesting. I mean, it's always I always like hearing about like someone that's taking an existing project or an existing technology and attempting to make it easier and more concise for people to start using it. So a lot of the stuff they're doing around with Docker and Docker networking is exciting, and it'll be interesting to see how they And if they're able to tie it into other container and virtualization technologies, like we mentioned, Rocket and Vagrant and all the others.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Docker, as I was saying there during the show, Docker is kind of the, what's the word? It's kind of the project of the moment, and it's really popular, and it's got a lot of hype around it. But it'd be interesting to... be interesting to see, as you say, as maybe in a couple of years' time, maybe it's not the new thing and it's not as cool and people want to move to something else. Be interesting to see how they cope with that kind of challenge as well. But very interesting product. So I've got a few things to mention before we finish off. You may have noticed, the people who certainly are watching live, last week we were talking about the show not being broadcast live anymore but and not having the chat room, but actually we're still going. We've still got it. So IRC is ticking away today in the background there, and we are still streaming live, so that's good news. So if you want to you want to get involved with one of the tapings of the show and you want to ask questions and all the great stuff that helps us out when you ask great questions, you can do that. We're moving to a new time next week. We're recording at 8:30 a.m. That's Leo time, that's Pacific time at the moment, and we're moving back to 8 a.m. So not too far, only half an hour, but just be aware of that for future shows if you want to get involved live. Okay, so hopefully Randall will be feeling better soon, and he should be back next week, I believe. But we've got some more guests coming up. Let me tell you about our guests. So next week, June the 10th, that is at the earlier 8 a.m. time. Oh, actually, it seems Aaron Newcomb is going to be hosting next week, and he's going to be talking to, I hope I get this name right, Munir Idrassi, I think I'll pronounce that. I hope that's somewhere near right. And they're going to be talking about Veracrypt, which is a technology to help you improve encryption algorithms, apparently. It says it adds enhanced security to algorithms used for system and partition encryption, making it immune to new developments in brute force attacks. That's quite a bold claim, so I'll be interested to hear more about that. What else have we got? Following week, we've got Pieros Papadias, I think I'm going to say, who's going to talk to us about SatNogs. I presume that's how you pronounce that. And that's on the 17th, again at 8 a.m. For the future shows. And we've got Dr. Jack Peterson and Joey Krug coming on to talk to us about Augur, which is you can find at augur.net. That's augur.net. And that's going to be on the 24th of June, again at 8 a.m. in the new earlier slot. So there we go. If you want to find out who's going to be on the show and you want to know more about it, there is a spreadsheet that you can look at and find all this information by going to our show, which is in twit.tv/floss. There's a link on the page right there, which will take you to a Google spreadsheet where you can find a list of future guests. And if you want to suggest, you want to recommend a project, a great open source project that you know about, maybe that you use, that isn't on the list that you think we should be talking about, then the easiest way to do that, the easiest way to get them on the list, is to contact the project leader or contact someone from the project and then have them contact Randall, who can get them straight to the top of the booking list and get them in for a show. So you need to get them to email merlin@stonehenge.com. That's merlin@stonehenge.com. And there we go. So... all right, then. I think that's all for the future shows. If you want to find us on Twitter, of course, it's @FlossWeekly. If you want to find us on Google+, you can find us there. Just do a quick search for Floss Weekly. All kinds of other places. I know Randall uses Google+ quite a lot, and we get a lot of interesting suggestions from there. So please feel free to jump in on there. And finally, I suppose, if you want to find out what I'm up to, you can go to danlynch.org, which is at the bottom of the screen if you're watching the video, and find out more about there. I've mentioned a couple of times we're doing a MakeFest event in Liverpool, which is a bit like MakerFair, which I know a lot of people will be familiar with. So lots of hardware stuff going on. Obviously some software as well, but mainly hardware, kind of hacking and more kind of art and craft stuff as well. I'm going to be there. It's in Liverpool, in the UK. It's called Liverpool MakeFest. And it's on the 27th of June, which is only 2 or 3 weeks away now, which is quite scary now that I think about it. So if you want to find out more, just do a quick search for Liverpool MakeFest. It's free to get in, I believe. I think there may be an Eventbrite thing where you can reserve a free ticket, just so we have an idea of numbers. But if you want to come along, maybe if you've Yeah, you've got some younger members of the family who want to get into, involved in learning how to build robots and play with Arduinos and stuff. It's awesome for that. So go and check that out. Tonight I'm going to Liverpool Linux User Group, although it's quite late now. So if by chance anyone's watching this live and they think, you know, they want to come along, we're going to be talking about Wi-Fi, community Wi-Fi projects. And that's at livelug.org.uk if you want to find out more about that. And I think that's enough rambling and plugs for me. So Gareth, is there anything you want to mention or tell us about?
I can mention Scale. I'm going to be very vague about it because we haven't officially announced it yet. But Scale will be moving to a new venue this year. And we'll have some new dates. And hopefully our call for papers will be out this week. So everyone should keep their eye on the Scale website, which is SoCalLinuxExpo.org, as well as our Twitter accounts, SoCalLinuxExpo. And our Facebook page, and I believe we're on Google Plus too at SoCal Linux Expo.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, and so definitely go and check that out. I haven't made it over there yet. I've got to make that transatlantic trip. I better maybe get practicing my swimming stroke or something, or learn to fly, or just actually just get like a plane ticket. It's probably the easiest way to come over and check that out. But I do encourage you to check out the Southern California Linux Fest as well. Gareth, thanks very much for coming on and co-hosting.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan. As always, it was a good time.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll manage to get the band back together again soon, hopefully. All right, then. So thanks to everyone for watching and listening to Floss Weekly. And thanks to our guests, of course. Don't forget to go and check them out. And that's it for this time on Floss Weekly. We'll be back next week.